Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I can see by your face you want to get into it.
How can you tell? I'm just one of the out-of-focus guys.
Here. Take it. Let's take a good look at it, all right? See, you love this t-shirt. It lets you say everything you want to say.
Well, it speaks pretty loudly to
it's
me.
It's a t-shirt. Do you give a about a t-shirt?
I'm just hungry, man. Let's just go out and find some barbecue or something.
Look, I'm always going to tell you the truth.
Are you doing coke again?
Oh, yeah, all the time. This is big stuff, man. From the very beginning, we said I'm the front man and you're the guitarist with Mystique. That's the dynamic we agreed on. Paige, Plant, Mick, Keith, Blackmore, Gillen. But somehow it's all turning around. We have got to control what's happening. There's a responsibility here.
Excuse me, but didn't we all get into this to avoid responsibility?
And let me just say what nobody else wants to say.
What?
Your looks have become a problem.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Something Matt Spiegel has said before to bandmates over the years. From our movie Matt and I love very, very much, Almost Famous, celebrating 20 years this year. And it's our pleasure to have the company right now of award-winning journalist, best-selling author Jim Miller, who is the writer and narrator for Origins in its podcast, Almost Famous Turns 20. Jim, joining us right now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is located in Melrose Park. Jim, thank you so much for your company today. We're so excited about talking to you about this. What was the motivation getting behind this on the 20th anniversary of a fantastic rock and roll picture?
Well, listen, it's pretty simple. It's one of my favorite movies, and I couldn't believe that it had been 20 years. And when I got in contact with Cameron and realized that I could, you know, somehow try and put the band back together again, I just thought this is a way to, it's a perfect time to look back and talk about what the movie almost was and what the movie was and who was involved and just talk to everybody. And so with the exception of the great late Philip Seymour Hoffman, who obviously is no longer with us, was able to get everybody, and it's just a blast doing it. They're just a terrific bunch of people, and not surprising because it was a terrific movie.
So you got a chance to talk to all of them other than Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's amazing. Was it in person? Was it via Zoom? How did that work? And did they love making the movie as much as so many of us have loved watching and living with the movie?
So thank God this was pre-COVID. I got to hang out with them and spend some time with them, although Peter Frampton was in Tennessee and we wound up talking studio to studio. But they were all very generous with their times, had me over to their homes, and it was really, it was great. And I think one of the things that comes clear is that this was, you know, for fans of the movie, we love it and we remember it, but they remember it too. You know, and I had told Cameron when I was interviewing Frances McDormand that we'd be together, and he surprised her and came at the end of the interview. And the two of them together, I mean, there's just no faking this stuff. You know, and the way Kate talks about Billy and Jason talks about, I mean, they were all joined at the hip, and it was a really special moment in all of their careers. So it's not like some fake, you know, oh, yeah, we had a great time. This was really for real.
I always love hearing that when I'm invested in a project that others had fun making it and enjoy watching it a time or two, maybe even, rather than be kind of indifferent about it and treat it just as work. You use the phrase, what the movie almost was a moment ago. My understanding, Brad Pitt was potentially going to be cast as a member of Stillwater. What can you share with us about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the things that I really wanted to do with this was to get some, do some reporting and get Cameron and others to open up about things that they haven't talked about in the past. And when this movie first started, you know, to be put together, Cameron was thinking about Meryl Streep for the role that Frances McDormand played, Brad Pitt for the role that Billy Crudup wound up playing, and Natalie Portman for the role that Kate Hudson wound up playing. Look, all three tremendous actors, right? But it's a totally different movie. And one of the things about Brad Pitt, you know, you bring up his name, it wasn't like Cameron and Brad had coffee together one day and he goes, hey, I'm doing this rock and roll movie, man. You feel like, you know, taking the lead. And Brad, rock and roll? Nah, I don't think so. Cameron talks about, they worked together for 4 months, trying to, like, figure it out, trying for Brad to get into the character, find his way into the character before he said no. But that's a long time. And, you know, I think we all need to recognize just what a totally different, I mean, I think Billy was perfect in the role, but it would have been a totally different movie with Brad.
So, you know, it's amazing. I love so many of Cameron's movies, especially that early period with Singles and obviously writing Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And, you know, there's so much good stuff. And then he does Jerry Maguire, which is great and is a massive hit. My perception has always been that was the moment where he said, ah, all right, now I can do whatever I want. And then you do Almost Famous and you get all that music cleared, which it costs a lot of money and is tough to do. You get to have all that control and paint this love story. And you also don't need a superstar like Brad Pitt to make a movie. So how close is that perception?
No, it's spot on, man, because look, the truth is, and let's not forget about Say Anything, which wound up being this cultural, you know, iconic thing. So Almost Famous was Cameron's fourth movie, and coming off of that little thing called Jerry Maguire, you're absolutely right. I mean, he had the keys to Hollywood, and he could have made a big franchise movie. He could have made a movie with all these big stars, but instead he decided to use that capital to get this small semi-autobiographical, sweet movie that he had been kind of like working on for 10 years made. And the truth is that you're absolutely right. I mean, the script was the star. Nobody was attached. It wasn't like DreamWorks said to them, okay, you can, you know, you'll get this movie going if you get Brad Pitt. You know, when Brad Pitt dropped out, they just on to the next. And so the script was really the star, and Cameron directing it was the most important thing. And it's just amazing that Cameron dedicated himself to, you know, getting this thing made. And, I mean, look, it's true that they got a couple flourishes because it was Cameron Crowe. Two things real quick. One was they got to shoot the movie in chronological order. And chronological order in a movie, being that's a gift. I mean, that is just, it's amazing for the actors. It's amazing for everybody involved because, you know, you really get to have that flow in your mind. And the second is they got to shoot on locations. So they were really in San Diego. They're really in Central Park. They're really in the Plaza Hotel. And, you know, those are the kind of things that don't really happen anymore because they're big ticket items. You know,
just real Topeka people.
Yeah. you say the script is the star. I would argue that the music ends up being the star, as it's supposed to be. You know, it's like the whole thing is about, I dig music, like to begin with everything, right? And what can you tell us about some of the ridiculous lengths they went to get all that music in there? And was there anything they wanted in there that they couldn't get in there? Because it seems like they got absolutely everything, including Steely Dan on the Midnight Special. And I know they didn't want that in there.
I mean, look, they got everything. And by the way, they had something else that Cameron wound up cutting, which is that in the original, in the uncut version, which is called Untitled and people can see it. There's a great DVD out there on it. But there's, believe it or not, Stairway to Heaven. Cameron got the rights to Stairway to Heaven, and they play it for Frances to try and engage her in the world of music, and they go through the whole thing. And, I mean, it was, and they took a lot of time shooting it, and, you know, Patrick's running around, William Miller is jumping around during it, and Francis has to have all these reactions. And it was also a scene where Anita's boyfriend was in it, which unfortunately he got cut out of it, basically the movie. But he had Stairway to Heaven in there too, and he just decided at the end that he didn't need it or it's going to get in the way of the ending. But it's, you know, to do that, look, when he decided on the bus, he already knew he had Tiny Dancer in his back pocket. And by the way, let's just be honest, because it's a great, great song, and Elton John's awesome. But Almost Famous took Tiny Dancer to a whole other level in terms of, like, popularity and people being aware of it. And so not only was it about having the song, but it was also being able to create the time in the shoot, in the production schedule. They took 2 days to film that bus scene because it became so important to Cameron. And I'll just tell you one other thing that just blew me away. When I'm talking to Kate, you know, Cameron worked on this for 10 years. I'm talking to Kate about one of my favorite lines in the movie, which is, you know, Patrick Young Williams says, "I got to go home." And Kate says, "You are home." Mm-hmm. And guess what? That wasn't in the script.
Hmm. That's awesome.
Come on. I mean, does it get any better than that? Because, I mean, that was extemporaneous. That was on, like, the ninth take of that moment. And what it shows to me, guys, is that you got a filmmaker in Cameron Crowe who's worked on a script for 10 years. And most directors would be like, okay, everybody, we're doing exactly what's on the page. As soon as we finish it, we're going on to the next shot. And here's Cameron, open to possibilities, and all of a sudden it's like, you are home. And it's like, well, that's better than anything on the page. Let's stay with that. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, we're with Jim Miller, who is the host of Origins Podcast, celebrating Almost Famous as it turns 20. And we're broadcasting from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Anybody who's a fan of Almost Famous, I would implore all of them to watch Untitled. And I think, Jim, my favorite scene from that didn't make the actual version of the film was when the band did the interview in Cleveland with the disc jockey who fell asleep during the interview, and the members of Stillwater sort of assumed control. As a radio guy and as a guy who's seen a lot of disc jockeys over the years all whacked out when they were wearing the headphones, that was a terrific scene. Do you have a favorite one that didn't make the cut?
I mean, I think probably the Stairway to Heaven one, but look, I've actually experienced that. You know, earlier books when I did a book tour, you know, probably like 20 years ago when late night radio was a big deal and I was in the studios and I had two different hosts fall asleep on me. And, you know, look, they're working long hours. I get it. But yeah, that was a fun scene. But I think the Stairway to Heaven scene for me is just so ridiculously complex. And Francis is awesome. You know, Francis and Kate were both nominated for Best Supporting Actress for that movie, and it just breaks my heart that neither one of them won, but they're still terrific.
So Jim, you know, sometimes a movie, when it's dealing with this kind of subject matter, really needs an ambassador to reality, you know, and Cameron is that, because it's about him and he can speak to the travels. But oh, it's nice, he's married to Nancy Wilson at the time of Heart, who co-wrote some of the Stillwater songs and is a straight up legit rock star and an epic guitarist. And, you know, so what kind of legitimacy did she bring to it in terms of training and getting these people ready to be rock stars?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing talking to Nancy. And the other person who was part of it, a technical consultant on the movie, was a little unknown named Peter Frampton. Yeah. I mean, it was just ridiculous. I mean, he brought the A-team out, and Peter was teaching Billy how to play guitar, and Nancy was writing songs and co-writing songs, and they did a thing, and this is why I dedicated episode 3 in the podcast for anybody who's really into music. Episode 3 is called Rock School, and for 6 weeks before production started, Peter and Nancy took the band and the Band-Aids and everybody, and they went off campus, so to speak, and they just kind of like told everybody, okay, this is what it's like. This is like what it's like to be rock stars. This is what it's like to be part of, you know, Band-Aids. This is what it's like to be in front of people. They got thousands of extras when they were doing some of those scenes. And, I mean, I actually said to Nancy at one point, I said, You know, I once paid to go to a baseball fantasy camp. I'll pay to go to your rock school fantasy camp. Huh. I mean, that just sounds like too cool. And one of the other things Nancy did, which I thought was she's terrific in the podcast, and she tells a story is, you know, I am a golden god scene, of course, and he's standing on top of that house. And right before he filmed that scene, he said to Nancy, he said, "Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you ever taken acid?" And she said, I got to admit, yeah. Yeah, I did. I have taken acid. And he goes, "Well, what's it like?" And she said, "You know, the thing, Billy, is that it shoots through your whole body, and it's almost like you got lightning bolts coming out of your hands and your fingers. And if you look at Billy Crudup up on that on that rooftop, you see him like extending his fingers like that." And it's just that one little moment of like verisimilitude, you know, that is so cool. And it just shows how detailed they were. Peter Frampton was like, no, that shouldn't be wood. That should be metal in front of that stage because they didn't have that back then. And that guitar strap, no, you can't use that because that wasn't around in 1973. And I mean, everything was just put through this unbelievable filter of reality.
Jim, I've heard Cameron talk about how he took little pieces of people he actually covered and got to know as a rock journalist on his way up and made them into Stillwater. What did you learn talking with Cameron or anybody else about who their characters, whether it's Jeff Beebe or Russell Hammond, who they were actually depicting?
Well, one of the cool things for me was that I was able to talk to Penny Trumbull, who was the chief inspiration for Penny Lane. And she's terrific in the podcast. And, you know, you talk about, I mean, I really asked her, I said, like, how do you get started on something like that? And how do you even, when you're that young, how do you escape on the road with rock groups and get backstage and everything? And so she takes everybody through that. I think, obviously, look, one of the things that happened with Cameron over the 10 years that he's writing was these things gravitated in different ways. Jimmy Fallon's character, and Jimmy Fallon is so awesome in this podcast, because at one point I said to him, I said, you know, in an earlier version of the script, your character was based on a guy who used to hang out and do stuff for David Bowie. And then, of course, Jimmy Jones is like, wait, you mean I beat Bowie out for this role? And then he does this great Bowie imitation. But I think that, you know, Cameron knew all these people. And so you start to realize that there's just so many qualities that you know that are grounded in reality.
Just beautiful stuff to be thinking about this and thinking about this movie that we all love. And there's certain moments that just are forever gonna come to mind. There's a scene, I think they're at the Hyatt House or the Riot House, the hotel. And they're running around the hallways, and just for a split second, I think it's the musician Pete Droege who's playing the guitar in a hotel room, and it's just like everything stops, and it's like 10 seconds of this gorgeous folk song and harmony, and then on you go, and it's just like, my God, the freedom to do every bit of that for Cameron. I hope he appreciates looking back that and feels like he did everything he wanted to do with the movie. Does he feel that way?
Oh yeah, I think he realized at the moment. Like, he talks about it in episode 5 because there was a moment, actually in episode 4 too, because there's a moment with Kate where you know, they're in Central Park, it's toward the end of the shoot, everybody's tired, and Kate says, we got it, and Cameron says, we're going to go again, I don't know. And there's always that, like, studio person, you know, says, oh, don't worry, you can pick it up later in pickups and reshoots and everything else. And Cameron was like, he was not going to leave anything to chance because he didn't want to risk not having reshoots. And by the way, there were no reshoots on Almost Famous. By the time he finished, DreamWorks had said, okay, you spent enough money, we're done. And so Cameron, at every single moment, is going to the deep end of the pool, is making sure that he gets everything he can possibly get. That's why they spent 2 days filming that bus scene. You know, that's why they spent so much time on that airplane scene. And that's why, to your point, he also, when he's in the editing room, he can have the luxury of saying, you know what, I do want there to be like this musical moment. I do want there to be like 10 seconds of this, you know, unbelievable song from this unbelievable singer. And he had it all at his disposal. So it's pretty cool to think about his commitment and his, you know, his knowledge at the time that he better get it right then because he's not going to have a second chance.
Jim, why, you know, Patrick Fugit, who played William Miller, was so adorable. Why didn't he put more skins on the wall after Almost Famous?
You know, I swear to God, it was like one of the, it was like an index card that I had on my bulletin board when I went into this thing, because he's so perfect. And, you know, he was a 15-year-old kid from Salt Lake City who was in real life totally intimidated by girls, very, very innocent. You know, he tells me in the podcast he talked, he wore two sets of underwear on that, in that scene where he loses his virginity because he was kind of worried about what might happen to him physiologically, as he put it, which is really cool. And the other thing about Patrick, just parenthetically, when Cameron's interviewing him for the job, he says, by the way, are you into music? And Patrick says, well, I have like a Chumbawamba CD. And Cameron goes, okay. He goes, well, like, do you listen to Led Zeppelin? And Patrick's answer was, I'm not familiar with his work. And so, like, Cameron's looking at him like, okay. But, you know, the truth is that Cameron saw in Patrick unbelievable innocence. And, you know, he was just perfect for the role. They looked at hundreds of people. And to your answer, to answer your question, look, I mean, he's been in other things, I mean, movies and other series. I just think that it's really hard sometimes. Look, you could say the same thing for Kate. Kate's had an amazing movie career, but has she ever had anything that was as perfect for her as Almost Famous? She was 19 at the time, you know, and I don't think so. And maybe you could say that for, you know, other people there too. So it's like sometimes when the Lord wants to punish you, he answers your prayers because he gives you this, you know, you're Patrick and you're 16 now and you have this unbelievable role and they just don't come around that often like that. And where it's perfectly tailored for you and exactly at this age that you are and, you know, it all just lines up beautifully.
Jim, we really enjoyed the time you gave us today, and so did many of our listeners whose plans have changed for tonight instead of exhibition baseball. They're going to give Almost Famous a spin. Thanks so much for giving us some time, and have a great day, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Jim Miller from Origins Podcast, Almost Famous as it turns 20. That was a lot of fun.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.